When you have health insurance, it's easy to forget about your out-of-pocket costs. That can be a lot of money. But are your bills accurate? Well, it's estimated that over 50% of medical bills contain errors. HealthLock can help you. HealthLock technology securely connects with your insurance and flags any overbilling, wrong codes, and fraud. You can even have HealthLock work on your behalf to get money back from select past bills. To date, HealthLock has helped its members save over $130 million. So to save, visit HealthLock.com today. That's HealthLock.com today.
If you're a firearms enthusiast like I am, or you have one in your life, let me tell you about the industry's best-kept secret, Bear Creek Arsenal. This is a veteran-owned and operated gun manufacturer, Bear Creek Arsenal, that is, based in Sanford, North Carolina. They make high-quality firearms at an incredible value. Learn more about Bear Creek Arsenal at BearCreekArsenal.com/buck. Use promo code BUCK to get 10% off your first order. One more time, BearCreekArsenal.com/buck and promo code BUCK to get 10% off your first order.
I know you're paying attention to global events as well as what's going on in our nation. War and increased conflict is bubbling up in more places. Countries are buying and hoarding massive amounts of gold. Why aren't you? It's time to pull the trigger with the Oxford Gold Group and buy gold and silver. Nobody can predict the future, but we can't put our head in the sand either. Call Oxford Gold Group right now, and you may qualify for up to $10,000 in free precious metals. Call 833-995-GOLD. That's 833-995-GOLD, 833-995-G-O-L-D.
Welcome to today's edition of the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show podcast.
Welcome in, Tuesday edition, Clay Travis, Buck Sexton Show. Drama, of course, in the Trump trial as Judge Marchand comes after Donald Trump for allegedly violating a gag order. Lots of discussion about that. The trial continues with David Pecker, what a name, on the witness stand, who was in charge of the National Enquirer at the time. There is, I would encourage you guys, I shared it, we'll throw it up on Clay and Buck as well. Amazingly, the New York Times has published a savage takedown of the charges being brought against Trump by a Boston University professor. I'd encourage you guys to go read it. It's really, really well done. We may talk some about that. Alec Baldwin in the news yet again for being harassed, but you may listen to the audio and actually find yourselves unbelievably thinking that Alec Baldwin is not the bad guy, which is the way Buck and I both responded.
I just want to prepare everybody today. We have a number of instances where we're going to have to call out people that we usually are throwing haymakers at here on the show. We're going to be giving them a golf clap. I just want everyone to be, there are a few instances of this.
Yesterday, we spent a lot of time talking about the protests that are taking place on so many university campuses. I would say primarily in the Northeast, although it's also on the West Coast now. Leftist institutions overwhelmingly now having sit-in protests, tents out on quads to attack Israel for the way that they are defending themselves in the wake of the October 7th terror attacks. And Columbia University, I can't believe this is real. Columbia University has ended all in-person classes for the remainder of the semester because they don't feel like it is safe, essentially, for students to be on campus, particularly students who might be Jewish. This has turned into a huge deal. NYU, I know they had a raid last night from the New York Police Department, but they also have faculty that are walking out and trying to create human shields for the pro-Palestine, however you want to classify it. I don't think they're necessarily pro-Hamas, although some of them do seem to be explicitly pro-Hamas. Basically, I think characterized as anti-Israel protest is a fair way to say this, that are springing up all over the country. And we have to give credit. I can't believe it, but on Morning Joe, Joe Scarborough, who is right up there with The View in terms of regular propaganda idiocy that is being espoused, he had a really good question. I want to play that for you, and then I will play the response. But first, credit where credit is due, Joe Scarborough actually making sense.
One of my pet peeves seems to be one of your pet peeves, and that is You know, 2 million people have been killed in the Sudan civil war. I haven't seen a protest at NYU for that. Assad killed 500 Arabs. I didn't see colleges burned down. 500,000 Arabs killed by Assad. Saddam Hussein killed over 1 million Muslims in wars. I gassed them. I didn't see protests there. And yet your school is shut down right now because Israel is responding to the worst attack against Jews worldwide since the Holocaust. Help us sort through that.
Great question, right? I mean, credit where credit is due.
He's entirely right. And Clay, you and I see this the same way. I want to get to that Galloway response,
yeah,
but just real quick. Who's a professor at NYU, actually a school that I almost went to, NYU Stern, the business school. You could do this in a whole range of ways. You look at the deaths in all those wars that he brought up. You look at the Yemeni civil war, which has claimed hundreds of thousands of lives. People are starving to death. It's been horrible, but it's Muslims killing Muslims.
Yes.
And this is a little bit like, and this is where you and I see it the same way, when we talk about police violence or gun violence in this country, it's only very specific gun violence or police involved violence that anyone seems to care about on the left. And as we've talked about, BLM pretends that it is cops killing black men across America without cause or justification because of systemic racism. And that is actually an incredibly rare, thankfully, incredibly rare event. But black people killing other black people on the streets of Chicago or New Orleans or Baltimore, other cities, is a far more common, but there's no movement. There's no marches in the streets. There's no anger,
yes,
about this. And you have to ask all these, they want to say they're anti-war, anti-Zionist, Clay. No, they're anti-Jewish. It's only when the Jewish people are fighting against Hamas that all of a sudden, or any terrorist entity, this really matters. But Galloway, he's right here. You want to call?
Yeah,
for this?
I wouldn't even say it's anti-Jewish. I think it's what really also is coming out. Yes, there's partly anti-Jewish. It's that Jewish people are seen as white, and as similarly, BLM.
This is what
only
I said at the beginning
about,
when this whole, yeah, thing broke out, that this is a race conflict. That's how it's seen in America.
They only care, BLM does, when a white person is involved in taking a black life. Because remember, even when it's police involved, the situation, the murder of the guy who was beaten to death by a collection of black cops in Memphis, that story vanished. They put out video of it. I mean, the guy was pulled over. I can't even remember his name right now. He certainly didn't get any statues. There wasn't any riots to speak of. It totally vanished. Now, if five white officers had beaten this black kid to death, Memphis would have burned down. But because it wasn't even just a police thing, it's just what color are the police officers, which is crazy. But that's how this is connected. But the response to, I wish, he's never going to do it because that's going too far, but I wish that Joe Scarborough had made that connection and said, wait a minute, all these BLM protests are similarly motivated, not on actual violence, but by what the race is of the person that they believe is perpetrating the violence. Who is, in other words, the oppressor, who is the colonizer. But here is Professor Galloway's response to that good question from Joe Scarborough.
I'll give you some more numbers. 2,200 American servicemen killed at Pearl Harbor. We go on to kill 3.5 million Japanese, including 100,000 in 1/9. 2,800 Americans in 9/11. We go on to kill 400,000 people in Afghanistan and Iraq. We weren't accused of genocide. If Mexico had elected a jihadist cartel to run their country and then they incurred into Texas and on a per capita basis killed 35,000 people or the population of the University of Texas and on the way back took the freshman class at SMU hostage and hid them under tunnels, what would we do? It'd be the great Sonora radioactive parking lot. But Jews are not allowed and Israel is not allowed to prosecute a war. And they are prosecuting a war more humanely than we have done. The ratio of combatants to civilians, civilian death to combatant mortality, is lower than it was in Mosul, lower than it was in Japan, lower than it was in Germany. So there's just a different standard for Jews in Israel when it comes to prosecuting a war. They're allowed to fight back to a truce, but unlike America or any other Western nation that has attacked this viciously, they're not allowed to win a war. It's a double standard.
Overwhelmingly, I agree with that answer. I would just say, not really fair to compare casualty statistics from the Second World War and today. Like, we have far better munitions, intelligence, etc. I mean, it used to be you wanted to bomb a part of a city, you kind of just drop the bombs out of the air. You had the Norden bomb site, but you drop them and you hope they hit. We have far better, and the Israelis do too, have far better intelligence now. But put that aside, you know, because he was saying Japan and Germany, that we prosecute the war, or rather the Israelis prosecute the war with greater efficiency. Well, yeah, it was a long time ago. That all said, his overall point is something we've said on the show.
Yeah.
Which is what, if you've, I think you actually, you even said a specific drug example. Cartels.
Yeah. Yes.
Did this. And it's absolutely true. And I would have nothing but contempt for anyone, American or otherwise, if in that example of the, you know, the cartel, and they're narco terrorists are a real thing. In fact, if you go back before bin Laden, the world's most wanted man was Pablo Escobar, who blew planes out of the sky and did political assassinations and was involved in, you know, in acts of mass murder. Narco terrorists are a real thing. If a narco terrorist group operating out of Mexico that had been elected by the Mexican people, by the way, that had won an election in Mexico, had done what had just occurred in Israel to us. And we were talking about sending in, you know, our elite units to just, you know, mop the floor with them. Anybody who would say ceasefire, I would have nothing but contempt for. And so I offer the Israelis the exact same moral calculation, the exact same moral freedom to operate that I would give myself under those circumstances.
I think it's perfectly well said. I don't remember the last time that I heard a well-reasoned, rational argument on MSNBC. And I give credit to Scarborough and Galloway for having that conversation, mm-hmm. because that is, I think, an elite, high-level discussion that is probably analogous, that to me is almost impossible for someone to respond to who is protesting against Israel right now and be able. Now, you could, I guess, be someone who is, so you could be a Quaker and say that there is no right to violence anywhere, but then obviously Hamas interacting violently on October 7th is tough for that argument.
Yeah.
But short of that, I don't even understand what the response would be other than, but they're white. That's really basically what this boils down to.
Not to get too deep into this with pacifists and pacifism, but Quakers can only exist in societies where there are other people who are willing to take up arms in the defense of basic freedoms and rights, so that the Quakers can take the positions that they have. Just putting that up there. But, you're not going to find any Quakers in Saudi Arabia.
Building on that analogy, everybody who is attacking Western civilization only has the ability to attack Western civilization because they have the good fortune to live in a Western civilization to be able to attack it.
I also think that we may be, and it depends on how long this goes, right? If we look at BLM 2.0, really, it began with George Floyd, and it started getting really big in June of 2020. We're a little more earlier. We're a little earlier in the timeline here. It's obviously almost May. But I think the problem they're running with is this has become the issue of the activist left. And this is the mobilization in an election year for the, you know, emotionally deranged leftist activist mentality and also infrastructure that they have at some level. Like a lot of tents showing up very quickly. I mean, I will say it does seem like
the exact same tents.
Yeah, it does seem like someone's doing something somewhere to help this stuff out, right? We can dive into that a little bit more. But the difference is Joe Biden is in charge. So you're mobilizing at a time when your guy, effectively, as a leftist, is calling the shots. And also, I think that there's a particularly powerful downside to this. Basically, what I'm saying is to mobilize around the cops are racist and America is racist, that works for Democrats in a way that having the left decide to just unleash all their anti-Semitism at once, I think is politically, not only is it wrong morally, I think it's a blunder too. And I think that there are some Democrats who are realizing this. They do not want this to continue through the summer. I do not think this is going to help their electoral prospects.
Not only that, I mean, it directly attacks the Identity Politics Coalition, because BLM brought together all the Arab protesters, in theory, all the Jewish protesters who are on the left. This is tearing it apart, which is why I sent you a message. I saw it was being shared. MSNBC, at least this morning, was not covering at all any of the campus protests that are going on. They are maniacally focused on the Trump trial. So if you only paid attention to the MSNBC website, to be fair, that clip that we just played you is from Morning Joe. So they were talking about it there. But if you're just someone who's going on to the MSNBC website, like what's the news of the day? All you would get is Trump. Is Rachel Maddow on Monday? I think she had a panel discussion. It was all Trump. I don't know that you would be very aware of this if you are a typical leftist person who is consuming news.
Well, I mean, the New York Times, it's front page New York Times. It's front page Washington Post, isn't it? I mean, MSNBC, I was going to say, is MSNBC even more to the left of those publications? I'm not sure that's really
I think
accurate.
That the challenge they've got is Trump is their great Satan, and they don't want to detract at all from the fact that the Trump trial is going on, because it is probably, frankly, better ratings, because there's a bad guy there that they've been wanting to get for a long time. I give credit again to Scarborough and Galloway for having this discussion. It would be a fun and interesting analysis of media. What percentage, let's compare Fox News coverage of the trial, which I'm sure they're covering it a lot, with how MSNBC and CNN are covering it, because I do think that's intriguing. These days, $20 bill doesn't go far, but it will buy you a full month cell phone service from Pure Talk. $20 a month gets you unlimited talk, text, plenty of 5G data from Pure Talk. You'll get the same quality of service as AT&T, Verizon, or T-Mobile, but for half the cost. We both rely on Pure Talk service, as do many of you. Average size family saves almost $1,000 a year, all with no contracts, no activation fees. When you switch to Pure Talk, you keep your phone number and your phone. Their U.S.-based customer service team makes it really easy. Make the switch today. Save an additional 50% off your first month. Choose a wireless company who shares our values and who creates American jobs. Dial #250, say the keywords Clay and Buck, make the switch today. That's #250, say the keywords Clay and Buck. The number one fantasy sports app in America is Prize Picks. It's the easiest and most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. 5 million members already active on Prize Picks. If you've not yet downloaded Prize Picks, do it today. Unlike other apps, on Prize Picks, it's just you against the number. It's about the players and not the teams. You look for the sports you know best and that you follow the most. Then you make a single decision on each player projection, more or less. Every time you play, you pick 2 to 6 players and make that one decision. You can win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as little as 4 picks. More player action on Prize Picks now than ever, and it's the best way to get action on sports in more than 30 states now. Prize Picks also gives you injury insurance, so your picks stay in play even if one of your players gets injured. Download the free Prize Picks app and open your account. Use my name, Clay, for a first deposit match up to $100. Download the Prize Picks app. Use promo code Clay, that's C-L-A-Y, to get set up and get a deposit match up to $100. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
Why are people still on the fence about owning gold and silver? I just don't understand.
Have we already forgotten about regional bank closures, inflation, global instability, and the potential for serious world conflicts?
You can look to precious metals for various reasons. One, having tangible currency on hand as part of your bug out plan. Two, diversifying your portfolio as a hedge against inflation. And three, historically, gold increases in value over time.
You keep yourself informed about global events. You see the increase in conflicts around the globe. Countries are buying and hoarding massive amounts of gold. Why aren't you? It's time to pull the trigger with the Oxford Gold Group and buy gold and silver. Nobody can predict the future, but we can't put our head in the sand either.
The people with Oxford Gold Group are real pros. They make owning gold and silver simple and easy to understand. Call Oxford Gold Group right now and you may qualify for up to $10,000 in free precious metals.
Call 833-995-GOLD. That's 833-995-GOLD. One more time, 833-995-GOLD.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/news. That's LifeLock.com/news to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
You know, we had said, I got to just tell you, Clay, I wish that I could do some man on the street stuff. You know, I'd put on a mask, obviously, COVID, got to be safe. Put on a mask, and I would say, operating, you know, as an independent journalist or something. I don't know. I'd come up with some story. That's true, but, you know, you don't have to tell them all this stuff. I would love to be able to ask these protesters questions. I mean, the one that would first come to mind is, so October 7th, how do you feel about that? And just to see their reactions. But you pointed out that there are a lot of signs out there.
Yes.
That give us a sense of the mentality, the psychology of these maniacs who are out in the quads yelling and protesting. And remember, it's not just about the protesting. I mean, they're shouting abuse at Jewish students for being Jewish. I mean, this is a regular occurrence at these campuses. They're shouting threatening things about the Jewish people and the need for retribution and all kinds of crazy stuff. So what are the signs like that you're seeing, Clay?
Some of the signs in this crazy Columbia protest that has been reported on: gays for Gaza, dykes for divest, lesbians for liberation. And there is a photo here of dykes for divest, which is connected to a Palestinian flag. So this is what, to your point, if you could be a reporter right now and you could go interview these gay kids that are protesting on behalf of Palestinian statehood or whatever they're trying to, basically anti-Israel protest, do they have any conception of what would happen to them at all if they were in Gaza? They could go right now and walk anywhere in Israel, and they could protest in favor of gay rights.
Do you want me to play the role of purple-haired lunatic leftist?
Yes.
And what they would say?
What do you think they would say if they were asked directly about the cognitive dissonance?
I understand the absolutism of the victim left, and that everything can always, you can justify anything because you're always the victim or you're always supporting the victim. They would say that any rejection of trans rights in Gaza is the fault of the Israelis for oppressing Palestinians in Gaza and not allowing the freedom to express themselves necessary to. So it's Israel's fault. I'm telling you, that is what the purpose, if they would even answer your question and not just shriek and try to spit at you, but that is what they would say. They would say that everything, Clay, anything that Hamas does, no matter how vile, is Israel's fault. That's the whole game. That's the way they do all of this.
This is also why the disconnect between race and religion is so important, because much of the Muslim faith is incredibly conservative in nature. Making a woman cover her entire body because you are concerned about what the reaction will be from men if she is not completely covered is insanely conservative. And it's based on their religious belief. But here in the United States, we've managed to divorce what is the multi-thousand year battle, by and large, in the Middle East, the conflict between the Jewish faith and the Muslim faith, and certainly Christianity rolls in there too. Historically, that's been the whole reason that we fight. This is only in the last 30 years has suddenly the argument become, based on the color of the skin, we're going to determine who is oppressed and who is the oppressor. And we've got a lot of Jewish listeners. The idea that Jews, of all people, would be the colonizers and the oppressors when you look at their entire past couple of thousand years of history,
well,
is so bastardized from any realization of the truth that it is crazy that the most educated people in America would have become such a cult that they are behaving in this fashion.
One is, I think we always can refer to them as the most credentialed via the education bureaucracy, right? I mean, there's education and then there's having letters after. As we found out, thanks to a listener about Dr. Jill Biden, who doesn't even have a PhD. It's some other thing I'd never even heard of before. But also, Clay, you have to remember that in the same way that Asian Americans have destroyed the left's race mythology around how it is racial oppression that prevents minorities from getting into Harvard, right? Or racism. It is racism that prevents minorities from getting into Harvard, whether systemic or otherwise. Well, no, actually, Asians had to face racism because so many of them would otherwise get into Harvard. You know, East Asians we're talking about now. And so that's how the Supreme Court ended up coming around to finally saying, and you'll notice a lot of schools are still trying to just ignore this, that you can't discriminate on the basis of race in college admissions. The left in our country has, and this is why people talk about, they'll say cultural Marxism. It's really a racial Marxism, actually. They've replaced economic inequality with this hierarchy of racial oppression, right? So instead of just where are you on the financial scale, it's are you, you know, the most oppressed race, a slightly less oppressed race, it's all on skin color. The history of the Jewish people, whom they consider to be white, remember this, the left considers them to be white, the history of the Jewish people would seem to be, on its face, a refutation of the core belief of the left, which is that the only people that face true discrimination are non-white. That white people, in fact, the left has claimed for years, you cannot be racist against white people because racism requires privilege and power in society. That means that effectively it is not possible for, you know, white people are always in this role of, well, this is crazy. Because as you point out, the history of the Jewish people, and not just the 2000 plus year history, but the last 100 and, do the math on it, the last 100 or so years, 120 years.
It was only 75 years ago that we had actual concentration camps where millions of Jews were being put to death because they were Jewish. I mean, this is why it's such a fundamentally broken worldview. In living memory, we can point to it being totally wrong. And yet, this is why my belief has to be, and this is, when we had this conversation the first hour, ultimately, I believe that logic triumphs. And I just feel like this is so crazy. This idea that Jews are oppressors and colonizers is so freaking, and I have to be careful not to curse because we're not allowed to. It's so freaking ridiculous.
But can I give you a...
Yeah.
Can I give you a little bit of a sad moment here? You know, again, you're logic and thinking
sad
about
trombone.
This as a person of high IQ. We can get a womp womp sound out here. Clay, the Democrats during the pandemic in 2020 embraced the just absolutely preposterous lie that cops are murdering black men without consequence systematically and frequently across the country. I mean, that was the underlying lie of BLM. Cops murder black men and nothing happens. So first of all, the guy who was even in the proximity of George Floyd just got, and there's a whole conversation we had about what did George Floyd really die of. We could talk about that another time. But, you know, the guy who was in the proximity just got sentenced to prison. So the notion that it was all a lie, they haven't walked away from it at all. In fact, I think they viewed it as entirely a successful op. I think they thought Operation St. George Floyd and BLM 2.0 rooted in a lie delivered the presidency in part for Joe Biden.
I think that's true. Here's the problem. BLM was beneficial, they think. I really don't see how this crazy anti-Israel protest is beneficial to the Democrat Party. I think it might actually cost them the election, which makes me wonder, you know, once you turn the crate, once you let crazy people rule you, it's hard to manage crazy people. And the crazy kind of seems out of control right now. How do you put the crazy back into the corral where the crazy is beneficial to you? It's like the, you know, the cattle rustling. One of the best Western movies of all time. Actually, a miniseries. Lonesome Dove, one of the great all-time Western novels by Larry McMurtry. It's all well and good when you've got the herd moving in the direction you want them to go. But when the herd breaks free, things fall apart in a hurry. It feels to me like the Democrat herd, this horde of protesters that they have been able to direct, oh, you're the white man's the problem. Let's go burn down a police precinct. Black people are being murdered indiscriminately. What happens when that turns on itself? Because you got some people who were in the BLM protest that are now walking past Columbia and they're Jewish and they're like, wait a minute, these people, we had to shut down Columbia University. These people are crazy.
I'm telling you, I was at a Passover with conservative Jews last night, and we're talking about this issue, and I was, you know, reading for, I learned a little bit of the Hebrew, but I forget, but I was, you know, reading from the books and doing all the stuff, and we talked about this afterwards. The left-wing Jews, as much as left-wing Jews, I'm not, you know, we are, the conservative Jews have already known, you know, they listen
Hollywood
to us,
Jewish
and they watch
community,
Fox,
let's
they,
just say, like, that's an easy way to, like, describe, like, a left-wing Jew would be like a Hollywood Jew, right?
Yeah, the left-wing, secular, I mean, they're sort of culturally and, you know, from an identity perspective, Jewish. They tend not to be very religious. The religious Jews, the conservative Jews, politically and religiously, they're already on team reality here. The left-wing Jews, I'm telling you, man, even with all this crazy stuff on campus, they're not going to vote for Donald Trump. And that's, they're not going to do it.
But will they not show up, or will they vote RFK Jr.?
I think they're still going to vote for Joe Biden. I'm just, you know, they're going to say, oh, he doesn't have a choice, but he's good on the choice issue. He's good on abortion. And he's, you know, he pretends to be a religious Catholic, but he's not really. He's actually a secular Marxist fraud. And, you know, they're going to, this is my fear. We'll see. But I don't see the Jews who see reality already see reality, you know, in terms of this election. They've seen it a long time.
Robert Crafts of the world are looking around. He's a billionaire, ostensibly a man who has supported BLM. I think some of them are looking around and saying, holy hell, we've unleashed the furies here. This craziness is too much for me. I could be wrong. Again, I tend to be an optimist and tend to be rational in the way that I analyze things, and we certainly live in an irrational era. If Jewish people vote for Democrats, I think any Jewish person who votes for Democrats is crazy in 2024. I really do. I mean, just based on what you're seeing.
We'll see. You know, making sense of the stock market, the machinations behind it, that's no easy task. But that's what editor and columnist Mark Chaykin does in his regularly published reports. Mark worked on Wall Street for 50 years before becoming a writer. In his time on the street, he invented three new indices for the NASDAQ and has predicted some of the biggest market shifts of the past decade, including the recent focus on AI stocks and all the hype around them. Now, Mark says most Americans are about to miss out on a critical turning point in this AI stock frenzy. Mark is saying this is a new dawn for U.S. stocks, and he predicts that dozens of companies, specific companies, will be impacted by this in just the next 90 days. That's why Mark has agreed to share one of his favorite AI stocks to buy now with our listeners. He puts everything in a new presentation you can watch for free at 2024AIstock.com. That's 2024AIstock.com. Paid for by Chaykin Analytics.
The Trump trial has already ended for the day, evidently. Trump is speaking right outside of the courtroom. We're going to analyze this in greater detail. But let's go listen to what he's saying live right now.
What's going on in this country now should have never happened. But of course, the Ukraine war would have never happened. The Israeli attack would have never happened. Inflation would have never happened. We have the worst president in the history of our country, and he's the one that has us in all these different lawsuits. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Okay. So that was, we caught the tail in there. We'll see if there was anything that he said at the front end. I think very similar probably to what was said before. Now, let's dive into Buck. I was surprised that this is out there, but this was published, a little bit earlier today, in a guest essay for the New York Times opinion piece. I thought the Bragg case against Trump was a legal embarrassment. Now I think it's a historic mistake. This is by a man named Jed Sugarman. He is a law professor at BU. And this is going a little bit into the weeds, but I would encourage you guys to read this. It'll be linked up at clayandbuck.com. I give credit, which is rare. We've given credit to Joe Scarborough on MSNBC, and now we're giving credit to the New York Times for publishing this. What he says, and this goes to the essence of his piece, is that there are three real major issues that he believes are impossible to overlook. And I'm just going to summarize these. It's a little bit complicated. It's almost like in this analysis, you're almost getting a law degree. For those of you who remember, we talked about O.J. Simpson dying a couple weeks ago. This, in the way that everybody almost got a law license by just following the O.J. Simpson case closely, similarly Bush v. Gore in 2000, you are almost getting a behind-the-scenes look at how a law license is gained. But he points to three big things that I'm going to summarize here. First, and I'm reading from him, he could find no previous case of any state prosecutor relying on the Federal Election Campaign Act as a direct crime or a predicate crime. And so the first part here is, this is a big deal. Effectively, Alvin Bragg is trying to use a state law to prosecute a violation of federal campaign finance law. Second, remember, in order to elevate this case, this is his second argument, in order to elevate this case from a misdemeanor to a felony, there has to be a second crime. And the second crime that is underlying here still has not been specified. This is crazy to me. By Alvin Bragg, he gave four different potential criteria that would support it. Merchan accepted three of those arguments, but they still haven't even specified the second crime, which would allow this to be elevated to a felony. And the third here is, there is no New York precedent to allow this case to be occurring. Again, I would encourage you to go read the case yourself to a large degree, but those are three major arguments that he is making here. And so this is why I've said, and everybody got so fired up at me, if I were on this jury, I would vote not guilty, because this is legally insufficient, in my opinion, to be able to justify a conviction. I'm looking at this from a legal perspective. I think there's a decent chance this will all be struck down, and eventually it will go all the way, I think, to the United States Supreme Court. Now, that's if there's a conviction. What he points out, which I think is really significant here, is he says that he thinks the Trump team failed by not trying to make an argument. If they had raised the issue of selective or vindictive prosecution, they could have delayed the trial past Election Day, even if they lost at each federal stage. So he's not just saying it's not a great crime. He's saying he does not a crime as it's constituted. Also, that he doesn't think Trump's legal team has provided the best defense possible for him. So all of this rolled in to say, most decent and reasoned legal analysts think this Alvin Bragg case is a total farce. And I give credit to the New York Times for actually carrying this piece. But if you just watched MSNBC or CNN, you would get the idea that this is a very legitimate prosecution. And the reality is it is not.
It's absurd. it's indefensible. There's no good faith explanation. It's effectively the legal equivalent of creating a carnival dunk tank, and Donald Trump is sitting on the little seat. Remember those things? You know, and you would throw the ball, and if you hit the lever, the guy drops into the dunk tank.
Oh, I've been in a dunk tank before. You ever had to sit in a dunk tank?
Oh, yeah. Sitting in the dunk tank is fun. I mean, let's be honest. You know, you kind of want
it was brutal.
And then somebody always does, they just walk up and they slap it with their hand. And it's like, well, you know, you're really not supposed to do that. You're supposed to hit it with the ball. But anyway, the dunk tank, you know, sometimes you got to go in. This is a dunk tank in New York City that Alvin Bragg is currently operating. It is a dunk tank with a former president of the United States, sitting there. And it is making a mockery of the criminal justice system. This is really frightening. You know, one of the things we often talk about, you know, what's different about America from other places? Clay, there are other countries with the rule of law, but it is still something rare to be in America or to believe in American justice in the way that we all do. In a lot of other countries, first of all, there's basically no justice system to speak of, but even when they try, the system that we have, you have as a citizen, as an American, you have a far better shot than you would in any other place. Once you start to have Americans lose faith in the criminal justice system, you start to wonder, how different are we from a lot of these countries that we think have lost their way? How different are we from places where the powerful rule and everybody just does what they're told?
And also, what happens if Trump is convicted here? This is why I look ahead to 2024 in 6 months. If Trump loses this race, then the lesson that Democrats are going to take, be quite certain, is lawfare works, because they have an unbelievably awful candidate. Look at what they're arguing in favor of Joe Biden. They're going to go all in on, they're already running these ads. Police officers are going to pull you over and make women take pregnancy tests. They're going to go with The Handmaid's Tale to terrify women. And they're going to argue otherwise? Democracy's at stake while they try to put their chief political rival in prison for the rest of his life. If they can win this race, they will say, we'll never have a worse candidate than Biden. And yet, with lawfare, we were able to win. We were able to beat Trump. They'll try this again. And if you're out there and you think, oh, Trump's uniquely awful, they'll never be able to find something to peg on anyone else, I'm sorry to tell you, you're wrong. Every one of you just about listening to us right now, if a federal prosecutor decided to go through everything that you have done in the last 5 years of your life and did a deep dive, that federal prosecutor, I'm sorry to say, could find something to charge you with, too. And you can sit out there and you could say, not me, no way. This is the truth.
If that felt like an exaggeration, people like you and me have been saying this for a long time, if it felt like an exaggeration before, how could anyone think it's an exaggeration now? Donald Trump is being prosecuted for the way that his lawyer recorded an NDA.
Yes.
Who, the crime, you know, even we talk about, so there's malum in se, malum prohibitum, right? Malum in se, hitting your neighbor over the head with a shovel and killing him because you don't like him. It doesn't matter what the law is. It doesn't matter if you're in New York or Kentucky or, you know, Kathmandu, like, that's wrong. That's evil, right? You can't do that. That's malum in se. It's bad because it's malum prohibitum, bad because the state says so, right? But even in malum prohibitum cases, there's some explanation as to why the state, you know, it would create disorder, or the state couldn't fund itself, or, you know, whatever, right? The state is a party to a wrong in some way. Now, that can be abused, and there are things that are malum prohibitum that I don't think should be. I just bring it up because in this instance, the wrong is the public's right to know about this because it would have changed how they view an election. Do you see what I'm saying? Like, this is a purely political crime. The state wasn't deprived of funds. The state wasn't repudiated in some way, or there wasn't some, you know, issue of they just, he just felt like the state had a right to know this, or rather the public had a right to know this. The whole thing is preposterous.
Even the way that they are trying to characterize it, they're saying this is the hush money trial. This is the hush money case. Hush money is legal. This is important. It's legal to pay hush money. Trump did not break the law by paying Stormy Daniels $130,000 to sign an NDA and not tell her story. Hush money is legal. Now, sometimes, this happened with David Letterman, some of you will remember, an attempt to get hush money can be considered extortion. Remember in the David Letterman case, the woman, I think used to, and I'm paraphrasing here, so if I get some of the details wrong, the woman used to work for David Letterman, had a relationship with him, said, I'm going to go public unless you pay me off. Letterman went to authorities and they arrested the woman for extorting him.
No, I thought it was the husband. The husband extorted him.
Okay, maybe.
Woman. Yeah.
The husband of the woman
she was said, involved too, I'm going to sell you a screenplay about a guy who does a late night talk show who has an affair. And it was a thinly veiled extortion scheme. And Letterman went to, if my memory serves, that is how it went down.
Okay, that may be. But the point on this is usually if David Letterman had just paid, the hush money itself is not a crime. So even when they're saying this is the hush money case, no. It's not even a hush money case. It is a allegation of a bookkeeping irregularity. And I think this is also important, and I don't know if it'll eventually come out at trial. I actually think the reason that Trump paid Stormy Daniels had nothing to do with the election. I think he didn't want Melania to hear this story. I think he was actually trying to protect his marriage as opposed to his viability as an electoral candidate, because I don't think many people would have been impacted by this story in terms of what they thought about Trump. I think Trump's marriage could have been impacted.
Also, there's so many things here. We sit here and go around over and over. The federal government that would be the authority for a federal election said there's no crime here.
Correct.
But Alvin Bragg, so they wouldn't even charge. Yes. They wouldn't even bring a case. But Alvin Bragg is saying, I'm going to bring something based on New York law, and I'm going to use the federal law that you didn't think Trump violated as the excuse to elevate the New York state charge to a felony.
Correct.
And then I'm going to do a repetitive count maneuver where you have 34 instances of the same thing because of each time it was listed anywhere or sent in an email or whatever. I mean, this guy, Alvin Bragg, is a lunatic.
Yes. And if you were on this jury, if I had been fortunate enough to be seated on this jury, I can tell you that I would have 100% said not guilty. Because I've analyzed all this. I've looked at it. There's nothing, unless there's some crazy story that none of us have heard, which I'll leave out there as a possibility. Hasn't happened yet. Unless there's some detail of this case that changes my perceptions of it completely, as a matter of law, I don't see any way that a person who is a functional, fair juror with a brain that works could vote guilty here. I think you're obligated to vote not guilty. Now, rigged jury system, a lot of people hate Trump. They don't care about the details. But what we just ran through, the New York Times editorial that we just discussed, actually makes this very sound legal argument. We'll talk with Andy McCarthy in about, 13 or 14 minutes about some of these details, that this is BS. And that anyone who actually cares about the precedent of BS being established as law to go after political opponents should vote not guilty as well. Mother's Day is going to be here before you know it. No reason to put off your gift selection when Legacy Box has a great offer for you, 60% off their regular prices. This Mother's Day, you can give the gift of a lifetime of memories made together, digitized forever with Legacy Box. An opportunity to take each of your stored videotapes, photos, old family film, and have brand new digital files that are protected and will last for a lifetime for your mom, for your grandma, for your wife. Great gift Legacy Box makes simple for your mom. I'm sure your mom or grandma, a lot of old media, old VCRs, a variety. 1.5 million families have already trusted Legacy Box with their memories. You send the old tapes, films, and photos to them. They transfer all those memories onto digital files and return everything you send them, plus brand new digital files. We've both relied on Legacy Box to do this for our families. What you get back in the way of family memories and entertainment, priceless. Go to LegacyBox.com/Clay for the best Mother's Day sale ever. 60% off regular prices. That's LegacyBox.com/Clay for 60% off.
Why are people still on the fence about owning gold and silver? I just don't understand.
Have we already forgotten about regional bank closures, inflation, global instability, and the potential for serious world conflicts?
You can look to precious metals for various reasons. One, having tangible currency on hand as part of your bug out plan. Two, diversifying your portfolio as a hedge against inflation. And three, historically, gold increases in value over time.
You keep yourself informed about global events. You see the increase in conflicts around the globe. Countries are buying and hoarding massive amounts of gold. Why aren't you? It's time to pull the trigger with the Oxford Gold Group and buy gold and silver. Nobody can predict the future, but we can't put our head in the sand either.
The people with Oxford Gold Group are real pros. They make owning gold and silver simple and easy to understand. Call Oxford Gold Group right now, and you may qualify for up to $10,000 in free precious metals.
Call 833-995-GOLD. That's 833-995-GOLD. One more time, 833-995-G-O-L-D.
When you have health insurance, it's easy to think, I'm covered, no worries. Well, not so fast. Remember, your out-of-pocket costs are not covered by insurance. That can be a lot of money for your family. But how do you know you're not being overbilled? It's estimated that over 50% of medical bills contain errors. Unless you're a billing expert, how do you know your medical bills are accurate? HealthLock can help. HealthLock is a healthcare technology company that securely connects with your insurance. When your medical claims come in, HealthLock technology reviews the claim for errors like overbilling, wrong codes, and fraud. HealthLock makes it easy to find and fix hidden errors, so you pay only what you owe. You can even have HealthLock work on your behalf to get money back from select past bills. To date, HealthLock has helped its members save over $130 million. Bottom line, insurance alone isn't enough. To save, visit HealthLock.com. Do it today before you see another healthcare provider. That's HealthLock.com.
Nowadays, $20 barely gets you a burger and fries or maybe a quarter tank of gas. You know what it will get you, though? For $20 a month, you can get unlimited talk, text, and plenty of 5G data from my cell phone company, Pure Talk.
You'll get the same quality of service as AT&T, Verizon, or T-Mobile, but for half the cost. The average size family saves almost $1,000 a year, all with no contracts and no activation fees. You can keep your cell phone number and your phone, or get great deals on the latest iPhones and Androids.
Make the switch today and save an additional 50% off your first month. Choose a wireless company who shares our values, who supports our military and veterans, creates American jobs, and refuses to advertise on fake news networks. Go to puretalk.com/buck to switch today so you can actually afford that burger and fries. That's puretalk.com/buck.
Andy McCarthy joins us now from Chicago. If I remember correctly, his son is a catcher for the University of Chicago. They are playing right now up at the White Sox field. That is pretty awesome. I'm sure that was fun to watch as a dad. Congrats, Andy. Let's dive into this chaos. New York Times publishes an editorial. I don't know if you've had time to see it. Basically saying the entire concept of this Trump trial is garbage. Credit to the New York Times editorial page for publishing it. It's a Boston University professor in the law school there who wrote it. Has anything that you have seen in the first 2.5 days, 3 days of the trial changed your mind about the legitimacy of this case? And if so, or is it even more convinced you that it's garbage?
Yeah, it's more convinced me it's garbage, Clay. And, you know, I think now that we're looking at it really closely, I'm not saying I hadn't looked at it closely by now, but like the insidiousness of this was not as apparent as it's become. To put it in a nutshell for people, you're supposed to, if you indict somebody, The charges have to be in the indictment. That's a constitutional requirement of the Fifth Amendment. What Bragg indicted Trump for was falsification of business records with criminal intent. At the same time he filed the indictment, he filed his own statement of facts, or what he purports to be facts. Now, that in and of itself is peculiar, because usually what prosecutors and grand juries do is, in the indictment itself, the grand jury alleges the narrative in which the various criminal offenses are alleged to have taken place. That's not what Bragg did here. He had the grand jury return a bare-bones indictment, essentially just stating the statutory offense without any color or description. Then he files his own statement, which is not the grand jury statement, in which he says the crime is that Trump conspired, or actually he uses the word schemed to steal the 2016 election by suppressing politically damaging information, which is not what the grand jury says. Then they get to trial and the ante gets up. So now they're not using the word scheme, they're using the word conspiracy. And the problem with this is, aside from the fact that it's not in the indictment, there's no such crime as conspiracy to steal an election or conspiracy to suppress politically damaging information. A conspiracy is an agreement by two or more people to commit a statutory crime, like bank robbery or murder or the like. There is no crime, and Trump isn't charged with it in the indictment. So the whole thing is just ridiculous from Jump Street.
Andy, who can, in the system, do something about this? Like, what are the ways in which someone on appeal or on some kind of an emergency motion, like, how can this crazy train be stopped?
The only thing I could think of, Buck, would be, and I don't think this would work, like an emergency application to federal court saying that Trump's constitutional rights are being violated. And I think what the federal court would probably say is, we're not going to intervene at this point. We'll wait to see what happens in the case, because if he gets acquitted, there'll be no reason to do anything. And if he gets convicted, he'll have his full array of, you know, appellate rights. Plus, that court hasn't been friendly to him anyhow. So I'm not sure they'd be tripping over themselves to intervene here. But they really should, because what's happening here is pretty outrageous. I mean, the other thing to note is that the way that Bragg inflated this misdemeanor falsification of business records, on which the statute of limitations would have run in 2019, because the alleged crimes were in 2017, the way he does it is he says that the falsification of records was done to conceal or commit another crime. And it turns out the crime, which he apparently hid this from the grand jury too, the crime he's talking about is federal campaign finance violations. And I think one of the things we haven't noticed, but we should start noticing, is that this is a clear episode. Well, it's not clear, but it's an episode of collusion between the Biden administration, the Biden Justice Department, and Bragg. And the reason I say that is, you know, it's easy enough when we're talking about Jack Smith to see that there's a relationship between the special counsel, the Biden Justice Department, and Biden. You know, Jack Smith exercises Biden's executive power, and he answers to Merrick Garland. So that's easy enough to see. But here, it's a state prosecution, so it's not easy to see. But the fact is, if you look at the Justice Department guidelines and the Federal Election Commission guidelines, what they say is that those two agencies are the exclusive authorities in law for enforcing federal campaign finance law in connections with elections for federal office. So if anyone else other than Trump were the person in the trick bag here, and a local prosecutor somewhere in the United States tried to enforce federal campaign law, the Justice Department and the FEC would ordinarily go crazy. They would not tolerate it. They'd be in court trying to stop it. it just wouldn't happen. But here, they haven't made a peep. And the only reason that makes sense that they haven't made a peep is that it's Trump.
I also think this ties in, and you'll be able to explain this better than I could. We talked earlier this week about the prosecutor who made the opening case, Matthew Colangelo. He had risen to third overall in the Department of Justice. I think we talked about this with Kash Patel Monday, maybe, or Tuesday on the show. You were a prosecutor. Have you ever seen somebody from this high in the Department of Justice leave the Department of Justice to prosecute a state crime? The analogy I made, you're at a ballpark up there in Chicago, would be this is a little bit like somebody who's in the major leagues going back down to single A or double A ball. If you have the political power that you would that high up in the Department of Justice over all federal charges to go and then do a state prosecution, it's kind of unheard of, right? Which to me is evidence of how enmeshed the Biden administration really is, even in this Alvin Bragg case.
Yeah, it's highly unusual. Now, to be fair, a couple of things. I don't know what Colangelo's status was there. Like, I don't know if he thought that they had their eyes on moving him out and moving somebody else in. And sometimes when people have political ambitions rather than just prosecutorial ambitions, a seemingly lateral move or even a move down can be something that helps your political career. So, for example, Rudy Giuliani was the number three guy in the Reagan Justice Department, but he asked instead to become the U.S. attorney in the Southern District of New York. And even though a lot of people in Washington may have thought that was a crazy move, for someone who was politically ambitious and wanted to be mayor of New York, it made perfect sense. And he became a much more famous and effective figure as the U.S. attorney in New York than he would have been as the number three guy in Reagan's Justice Department. So there's a lot that goes into it. But to leave a position like that to try a single case would be highly, highly unusual. Although you and I both know that, you know, whatever Democratic prosecutor nails Trump is going to be, you know, he's going to be an icon for these guys.
So, Andy, this brings us back to where this is all heading, it seems, right now, and also the gag order. Can you tell us about how you're viewing that component of it? Because there's been a lot of back and forth between Trump already and the judge, and they're saying, oh, you know, he's saying things about witnesses he's not allowed to say. It just feels like what are the limits of this gag order? Can you just weigh in on that component?
Yeah, well, I've had a big problem with the gag orders from the beginning, Buck, not just this one, but also the one Judge Chutkan issued in Washington. And the reason is, I think these arrogant judges, and these are the Democratic judges, I don't think Aileen Cannon has done this down in Florida, but I think these arrogant judges won't accept the fact that in this system, every right and every duty has to coexist with other rights and duties with which it's intentioned. And sometimes, even though the administration of justice in a case is a very important public interest, there are higher public interests than that. So robust political debate in connection with an election for the highest office in the country is a high constitutional interest. Trump has a constitutional right to run for the presidency. So even if in a normal case you would crack down on what parties could say for fear of influencing the jury pool or intimidating witnesses or what have you, here the interest in the administration of justice has to yield to some extent to these other more important interests. And these judges won't do it. And the fact that they keep saying the administration of justice has to be exalted over all, otherwise Trump is, you know, somehow above the law, is ridiculous. If they were that interested in the administration of justice, they could put the trials off until after the campaign is over. And then nobody could argue that the administration of justice was the higher interest at that point. But they won't do that, of course, because the prosecutors, who they're working in cahoots with, it seems, want these trials to take place prior to the election. So it's like they create the crisis that puts the administration of justice in tension with these other more important constitutional issues. And then they say, you know, Trump is the one who has to yield, as if like a court doesn't have to ever bend to some more important interest. So that's what's happening here. And I actually think, given that Trump is running for president, which he's entitled to do, and giving the public interest in robust debate in a presidential campaign, Trump should not be gagged except to the extent that the law already essentially limits what people can say. So, for example, if Trump makes a comment that amounts to incitement or obstruction of justice, he can be prosecuted for that. If he says something that defames someone, he can be sued for that. If he says something that helps the prosecutor's case, they can use it against him in the trial. So he's got a lot of incentives not to say stupid things, and there's a lot of downside for him in saying stupid things, but he shouldn't be gagged ahead of time and told what he can say and what he can't say under circumstances where every witness is allowed to talk about him, and every political candidate, including Biden, can say whatever they want about the lawfare against Trump, and he's not allowed to respond. That's crazy.
Last question for you here, Andy. You've picked a lot of juries over your life and been involved in jury selection. I know you haven't set for jury selection, but based on what you have seen, Buck and I both say there's a 0% chance of a not guilty verdict. I bet you would likely say that as well. Do you feel like Trump has any reason for optimism based on the jury was selected that there might be someone or maybe more than one person who are willing to consider a not guilty verdict? Any read from you on this jury?
Yeah, I'd say two things about that, Clay. One is some of that gets evened out. I agree that Manhattan is not great for Trump, to say the least. On the other hand, you know, I wouldn't read too much into Manhattan by the fact that they elect Alvin Bragg as their DA. The people who vote in those elections are, you know, it's tiny compared to what the jury pool is. And I think there's a lot of people in the jury pool who would be sympathetic to Trump. And statistically, what the advantage Trump gets, aside from not having to prove anything, is that he only needs one juror to get a mistrial, whereas Bragg needs all 12 to convict. And the one other thing I would say about it is I think under New York law, Trump is entitled to a lesser included offense instruction, which means he should be able to get the court to instruct the jury that they could find him guilty of the misdemeanor business record.
Sort of a compromise verdict is an option, in other words. It's not either or.
Yes, but here, if they were to convict him of that, the statute of limitations ran on that in 2019, so the case would have to get thrown out.
Oh, wow. That's a great point.
Very interesting. Andy, we're going to need you to stick around. I know you got baseball with the son and fun things to do in life, but, you know, it's going to be a long, what have we got, 6-7 months here. So thank you for being with us, Andy McCarthy, and go check out his latest at nationalreview.com, everybody. Thanks, Andy.
All right, guys.
Thanks very much. You know, the work at the Preborn Network of Clinics is so admirable. The dedicated men and women involved are saving the lives of tiny babies every day. They do that by giving an ultrasound experience to pregnant women who are deciding between life and abortion for their unborn baby. They offer this ultrasound so that the mom can meet her unborn child. And that's just one of many resources, though, that pregnant mothers can count on at the preborn centers. Maternity clothes, diapers, baby care items, all are available for those who need it. But it's that ultrasound experience that so often is the decision point for mom to give life to her baby. Because when mom hears that precious heartbeat and sees the baby's movements, the choice so often is made for life. An ultrasound is just $28. Any amount you can donate will help, and all gifts are tax deductible. To donate securely, dial #250, say the keyword baby. That's #250, say baby, or go to preborn.com/buck. That's preborn.com/BUCK, sponsored by Preborn. Born on America's darkest day of 9/11, the Tunnel to Towers Foundation has been helping America's heroes ever since. When a first responder or military service member doesn't come home and young children are left behind, Tunnel to Towers pays the mortgage on the family home to lift the financial burden.
For severely injured veterans and first responders, Tunnel to Towers builds mortgage-free smart homes, enabling severely injured heroes to move around their homes more independently. Through the Foundation's Homeless Veteran Program, Tunnel to Towers is providing housing and services to homeless veterans. More than 3,300 were helped last year alone, because all veterans who honorably served, whether in peacetime or war, deserve our nation's gratitude.
People who put their lives on the line for our country and our communities need your help now more than ever. Join Tunnel to Towers on its mission to do good and never forget 9/11 or the sacrifices of this country's heroes. Donate $11 a month at T2T.org. That's T, the number 2T.org. Grand Canyon University, a private Christian university in beautiful Phoenix, Arizona, believes that we're endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. GCU believes in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. Whether your pursuit involves a bachelor's, master's, or doctoral degree, GCU provides a path to help you fulfill your dreams, offering over 330 academic programs as of September 2023. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Hey, have you ever used Cheapo Air?
For years, and I really like it. With Cheapo Air, you can book online, use their app, or even over the phone. They've got great prices on over 500 airlines and millions of accommodations. They're my go-to for travel planning. And if you join their Club Miles program, you can earn points to save on the cost of your travel. Book on the app and you get double points.
Sounds like it's time I tried Cheapo Air.
Call Cheapo Air at 855-247-3279 or visit cheapoair.com/podcast.